You want to start, Cam? Or you want me to start?
It's up to you. All right.
Why don't I hit? I'll hit four and we'll go.
Go for it.
All right. The fourth step in recovery in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous.
What does it say?
We made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. All right. It says in the big book that, you know, we took the third step. The wording was, of course, quite optional so long as we expressed the idea of voicing it without reservation. This was only a beginning. Though if honestly and humbly made an effect, sometimes a very great one was felt at once. Next, we launched out on a course of vigorous action. If the big book was understatement, they're saying vigorous action. That means we are going to put some muscle into this. We're not going to just sit back and relax and let the river run. We're going to go after this thing. The first step of which is a personal house cleaning, which many of us had never attempted. Though our decision was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless at when? At once. Followed by how much? A strenuous effort to face and to be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. Blocking us from what? From God. Page 64 at the top. Okay. Our liquor was but a symptom. Whoops. There's the line I was looking for. Do you see? Time and again, they're telling us alcoholism is a real disease. Our liquor was but a symptom. The disease is not in the bottle. It's in the human. Okay. So we had to get down to causes and conditions. And then it talks in here about a three-part inventory. With a resentment inventory having four columns. The first one is the person, principle, or institution, the first column. Second column is the cause. It's always a temptation to say, I'm resentful of Joe Blow. Why? He's a jerk. That's the end of it. Now, we're not saying specifically why Joe Blow is irritating us. And it's better if we run it all out. That's the advice I got. The third cause affects my. Then we have a checklist. Security, self-esteem, ambitions, pocketbook, sex relations, personal relations. And then the final one is my fault. When we saw our faults, we listed them before us in black and white. Okay? What are my faults? That's the fourth column. They're on the next page then. Where was I selfish, self-seeking, dishonest, or frightened? Now, I'm just sharing with you the way I do it. I was advised to do this when I laid all that out for you right then. I got drooping microphone. What's the secret here? Harry's putting a muscle on it. I'm feeling good. Thank you. No, here we go. So... Where's Bill? What is this? Now we'll stay where we put it. This is a blank spot in your tape. It occurred because I had drooping microphone. We're back. Thank you all. I appreciate it. So, when I laid that out for you and I did this column thing, it kind of goes, wah, 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 the way Charlie Brown hears adults, right? So I was advised, if I'm going to put something in my third or fourth column, which is it affects my person, my life in this way, or where my faults are, I'm to flesh them out. If I had a reason for putting them on the paper, I need to write the reason out. I'll give you an example. This is out of my first inventory. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I was 6'3". I weighed 145 pounds. I looked like an antenna. And this guy called me skinny. Oh, my. That was like the worst thing. I was so self-conscious about how thin I was. I wish I had a little more of that problem now. But anyway, I'm resentful of Joe Blow. Why? The cause. He called me skinny. I'm going to shorten this. It affects my self-esteem, you know. I don't feel good going around like this. It affects my ambition. I want to be like a manly man. My security, to have people think I look good. You understand what I'm saying? Now you understand what I'm telling you, how it affected me, because I'm fleshing it out. I'm telling you what security, self-esteem, and ambition means. Otherwise, I'm going to go into a fifth step, and I'm going to say, I'm resentful of Joe Blow, the cause he called me skinny. It affects my self-esteem, security, and ambitions. Now what do you know? Nothing. And I've said nothing. And, you know, now I'm going to my fourth column. Where's my fault? I'm being dishonest. I am skinny. Try that one off your side. That's how I set myself up. I'm going around like picturing this thing, maybe from the neck up or something, and I'm like Sylvester Stallone. I'm skinny. So, you know what I mean? And I'm dishonest. I don't want to be the way I look. I don't want to look the way I look. So I offer that for your consideration in writing your own inventory. If you put it on in the third or fourth column, you had a reason. Just list the reason. Now you're finding out in those reasons, especially in third and fourth column, the universal problems in your life. Here's where my security is. I put it in this false thing. My ambitions, I'm always reaching out for my ambitions. I'm not willing to live my life the way it is. I'm a liar. I'm a liar about myself. You see what I mean? And I'm willing to lie to get my way. And I'm selfish. And I'm filled with fear. So these things, and I can get to specifics, then I find out, well, that's another story. Okay. So... For that part, I'm going through this like a blitzkrieg. Hang on now. Put your seatbelts on. Then we go to the next one. And Peter, I'm going to give you a shot through all this. That's okay? All right. Then we go to the next part, which is the fear inventory. Notice that the word, bottom 67, fear is bracketed, blah, 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 and it goes along. On 68, we reviewed our fears thoroughly. 68. We reviewed our fears thoroughly. When I got sober, guy says, just write down your fears. I'm afraid of the light. I'm afraid of the dark. I'm afraid of people. I'm afraid to be alone. I'm afraid of spiders. I'm getting nothing out of this. I'm listing my fears. But that's not what the big book says to do. It says more. So now I write a four-sentence paragraph on every fear. We reviewed our fears thoroughly. We put them on paper even though we had no resentment in connection with them. Okay? We put them on paper. I am afraid of elevators. First inventory. We asked ourselves why we had them. I'm afraid the cable will snap and I'll die. Wasn't it because self-reliance failed us? Put some statement of my self-reliance. I am selfishly trying to preserve my own life by not getting on elevators. All right? This is Mickey's answer to having a fear. I'm going to be self-reliant. And then next paragraph, it says, perhaps there's a better way. We think so. For now we are on a different basis. The basis of trusting and relying on God. Okay? We trust infinite God rather than our finite self. So once again, that paragraph for the elevators is, I'm afraid of elevators. Why? I'm afraid the cable will snap and I'll die. I am selfishly trying to preserve my own life by not getting on elevators. And a negative statement of God reliance. I am not trusting and relying on God to care for me and protect me. Okay? That's how I write fear inventory. I'm hoping that comes out of the book here. But it's a lot better than I'm afraid of spiders and snakes. I'm not going to get anywhere with that. And now fear inventory turns out to be the most satisfying inventory I write. Because I understand that fear is not a bottom line. The bottom line behind every fear is self-reliance, which means selfishness. Selfishness and self-centeredness, the book says, is the root of my problems. Okay? So, this is the fastest I've ever done that. I really think it's kind of fun. Is it making any sense? All right, thank you. So, now we go into the third part of the fourth step, which is a sex inventory. And the big secret on sex inventory is it's not about sex. Right? Basically, bottom line, the sex inventory is, am I drinking people, or in the case of sex without partners, myself, and am I misusing my sexual powers for selfish reasons? All right. Now about sex on the bottom of 68. Many of us needed an overhauling there. Man, did I need an overhauling there. We come, we owe the truth to each other. I had a terrible pornography habit. What happens? I put down the bottle and I picked up sex fantasy and pornography. It's a drink. It's a drink. Phone sex. I'm married. What the hell am I doing? I'm out of my mind. Well, but say, it's just sex. It's just sex. Are you kidding me? I'm made to be a person of integrity. I'm made to be a whole human being. I'm made to be a good man. I can't stop this. I beg God for 6 years, please, God, take this away from me. Please, God, take it away. And he did. Does it take 6 years? It took 6 years for me. Why is sex so troublesome? Because sex, it gives us a physical hit to our central nervous system, and I get up. It's like a drink. It's just another drink. And I just happen to be an escape artist. I'm an alcoholic. So how do we write the sex inventory? I'm just offering this. At the top of page 69, well, actually in the middle of 69, it says this. We reviewed our own conduct over the years past. So now I'm going to write another paragraph. I'm not doing four columns. Is it okay if you do four columns? Of course. I don't know how you're going to do it, but that's up to you. But what I do is a paragraph, and it goes like this, you know. Where had I been selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? It's not about the kind of sex we're having. It's about what are we doing with other human beings or ourselves. So where was I selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? Who did I hurt? Whom did I hurt? Did I unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? I might have aroused jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness, but that's not the question they're asking me. They're asking me, did you use jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness as a tool to manipulate somebody else? That's my understanding of this. Unjustifiably. Because I could be hanging out with a very suspicious, jealous, bitter person. They're going to go there anyway. Where were we at fault? Well, I was at fault because I'm in here with a different motive than love. I'm in here with a different, there's no vow. I'm not going to stick around. You know, can I use you for a while? Nice, huh? Who likes to be used? Nobody likes to be used. Nobody likes to be used. And then here's this question. Now, what I noticed in, there was a stretch of this, that in working with other people, the question is, what should we have done instead? And I noticed a lot of people were not answering that question. somehow or other they felt like they'd gotten the sex inventory taken care of, and they're not addressing what should they have done instead. For me, the answer was monotonous. I shouldn't have been there in the first place. I should not have been there with those motives. I shouldn't be doing this. And just because I gave up drinking doesn't mean I can eat myself to death or have sex and be like a tornado roaring through people's lives. You know, and I can't tell you, I've listened to this inventory. Well, I was with this prostitute. Really? Okay. You're with the prostitute. Is she better off or worse off because she met you? Did you take care of her at all? I paid her. Is that helping her at all? Do you understand what I'm saying? I'm going to use her, and it's okay because I paid her. She's destroying her life. Nothing sadder than a prostitute. Nothing is sadder than a prostitute. They're locked in that life, and that's serious business. You don't have to agree with me, but I'm going to get this commercial out there. Do you know, that's somebody's sister. That's somebody's mother. That's somebody's aunt. That's a human being. I got no business being there helping them stay sick. How they're going to support themselves after that, that's not my business. But I don't want it to be my dollar. I don't want it to be my dollar because now two of us just went down the pipe. These are human beings. I'm off my soapbox now. I'm also finished. Where is Peter? Yay! I'm done. That was it, man. Boom. I hope that was of some value.
I'm still working on the droopy microphone. I'm glad it's the microphone that's droopy, right? All right. It's that time of the day. Now we'll see who's spiritual right around now. Okay. Am I willing to live on terms other than my own going into this work? When step three, we turn everything over, we're about to launch on a course of vigorous action. It's no longer according to my rules, but this power that I don't even know yet's rules. And I'm really trusting, relying upon a sponsor to guide me through, navigate me through this wreckage. And here's what I have, some of my experience with this fourth step. I tried writing a fourth step the first time out without prayer. I did a third step prayer. Sponsor gave me instructions, and I sat down and write. And I've shared this from a million of these podiums, and it kind of looked like this. Got notepad in front of me, no prayer to go in. There's no amen after the third step prayer because we're about to go in. And at the end of the seventh step prayer, there's an amen because we're done with the searching. We're going to take a look at we looked at defects. We're about to go out and repair the damage caused by living life on self-will. So we got to go in. We need to have God take us by the hand and show us the wreckage. Right? Lack of power is my dilemma. With power, no dilemma. So I'm using me and self-reliance to go right to searching fearless moral inventory. It's an impossible task. I will conveniently forget. I will dismiss a lot of things. I will still be dishonest, and I am writing the fourth step. I remember once Joe H., when he was alive, called me up. He's, how's that inventory going? I was going through the work again, maybe the fifth or sixth time. He's, let me hear some of your inventory. And I got into, like, the first couple inventories, and he had this very sinister laugh about him, and he laughed at me. And I thought I was going to get four stars for this wonderful inventory. And he says, you're writing that inventory, not God. And then he hung up the phone. The first time through the work, I wasn't praying. And quite frankly, I wasn't instructed to, I wasn't given clear-cut directions to make sure you pray. I was just told pray. So on that, I take that on my terms. I pray in the morning, at night, but not to do an inventory. And so I would sit down to write, and then I would say, well, I'll make some coffee. And because I'm thinking it's going to be a really long night, I'm going to be writing this War and Peace novel. I need lots of coffee. So I make a whole pot of coffee, and I have a sip or two. And then I say, well, maybe I should eat something because it is going to be a long night. And after I made myself a little sandwich, I'm a bachelor, so you know what that looked like, cooking for myself, frozen pizza. I said, well, I need to digest my food now before I get into this course of vigorous action. and I fall asleep. And then I said, okay, tomorrow I'm going to do it, and I'm going to work. I'm going to write this inventory. And now, mind you, before I got this first little apartment that I'm writing this stuff, and I'm sleeping in ratten and roach-infested hallways, and I'm just as filthy as the hallway. And now I have this little apartment, and I'm looking around and says, well, I really should tidy up a bit and vacuum and sweep and you know, in case someone does come over while I'm writing this inventory. And then I get tired and not write. And then when I would write, that's not that, but I'm not really angry with them. It's just kind of a mild irritation. So, and I got stuck. And I called up my sponsor, and I'll clean up the language, but he talked about how I had to turn things over, and he gave me instructions. And the instructions were to write a prayer across the top of the page. I cannot be searching fearless or moral on my own power. I do just the opposite. And it started off with, thank you, God, for allowing me to be searching, fearless, and moral. I was acknowledging what God gave me at one time. It's just gotten convoluted with other things. And then I was to go into prayer and then sacred silence. And there's a movement to this. There's a rhythm to this. And then the impulse would be, okay, let's go write. The intuitive thought, I should say. And I pick up the pen and I begin to write. And little by slowly, this inventory was getting done. I wrote a master list of names first. Then I took each name and went to the second column, why I was angry with this person. And then I looked at my third column, the seven areas of self, and fourth column, back to the next name. And I would do this whole person, all the causes, all my third column, all my fourth column, back to the next person. Mom, she was alcoholic. She committed suicide. I thought she was weak, and it went on and on and on. Never stood up to Dad. Embarrassed me in front of my friends when she was drunk. Dad, he was like a gangster. He never played sports. He never came to my games, and went on and on and on. And then so on. And I had my first and second column done, and I would go to the third and fourth column. Now, the only way I was able to do that was through prayer. And then when I was done writing for that evening, and whether it's an hour writing or 2 hour writing or it's a marathon writing, sometimes just 20 minutes, all the Spirit's going to give you, not more than I can handle. Only God knows how much I'm able to digest. I would close the book and give prayer of thanks. Thank you, God, for allowing me to be searching for some more. And then I go about my day because I'm shifting in. And then I have to get out. And I start to write, and I found this pen becomes the spiritual translator. I'm not writing. And if you ever done inventory, you go, wow, where is this one coming from? Oh, I remember that. And why am I thinking about this? Now, if anyone tells us that the inventory is a cakewalk, is lying to us. We're a sociopath if we don't get disturbed in there. It's going to disturb us, shake it up to wake. It's going to be things that are going to be revealed to me that make me uncomfortable. I'm taking stock of me. Nowhere in my book says, where was my part? Because if it's just my part, that means you had a part too. My book says, we had to disregard the other person involved entirely. So if you rip me off, you rip me off. But I've been gossiping about you. I disregard you rip me off. I got to take a look at why am I gossiping about you. What an order. Just raise the bar way up here. The only way I can do that is with God's power, not on my power, because I'll seek vengeance rather than taking my inventory. I started to complete this work finally. And what happened, it was the innocent climb. I don't know where I was going. I was told to do it. Nowadays, I just close my eyes, release, and write. I don't know where I'm going. And through the journey of doing this, we may not experience so much of it when we're going through, but we look back on those days of writing inventory and how God guided and God cared for we were. And I start to like kind of wake up and smell the roses. Little things, I have this, as I'm writing in this wreckage of my life, I'm saying, oh my God, I actually have my own little apartment that's clean. I go to work every day. I bathe twice a day. I even have money at the end of the week. I haven't thought about drinking. I have a sponsor. I even have a home group. And people treat me nice. I'm actually treating people nice. This is past. What an awakening. The things in that inventory came up were ugly. My inventory, not yours, going back through my life, uncovering and discovering a lot of things that were earthy, uncomfortable, But as my sponsor had pointed out the first time through the work to me, I'm going to God to clear up the things that are blocking me from him, because on my own I can't see it, the way I can't see my own ears. So we shut the lights in this room, close all the blinds, and move the chairs around, and I come in here and trip over a chair and trip over a table, and I fall and get hurt day after day after day. And one day I go, God, please show me how to get to one side of this room to the other. He says, well, let's turn on the lights. And take my hand. I'm going to show you what's in the way. The tables are here. The chairs are there. These are broken. They have to get thrown out. These we just got to clean up a little bit, put this stuff against the wall, and suddenly everything gets cleared out. And most of it gets thrown out. And I look back on that. I say, oh, my God, on my own, I kept stumbling with God. Suddenly I'm able to walk in and be free, which is what goes on for me in inventory, only with his power. And what a great sign of trying to experience some humility when I go, Father, please walk me through this, because on my own I'm getting drunk. I cannot do this. And so I made an attempt. I tried self-reliance the first time to this work, right, in inventory. I don't need to pray. And I hit a wall quickly. And then I start to write, and I start to discover some things that were very uncomfortable, but I need to remember it was the Father who gave it to me. I went to him, please get me free, and say, here's what's in the way. But he, whatever shows up, I have found out in inventory, no matter how uncomfortable it is, it's coming from God. It isn't to punish me, it isn't to hurt me, it's to reveal things that I've been blocked to. That's the purpose of this, to remove the blocks. And he says, okay, I'm going to show you, but I'm showing it to you. Therefore, it's perfect. It's good. Although the humanness in me says, I don't like this. It doesn't make me feel comfortable. It's more pruning. It doesn't feel uncomfortable. It even hurts at times. But it's the Father giving it to me. And so now it's just a little different attitude. I still get disturbed, the thing with the church that we wrote about. I didn't like caring to look at me on paper, that I had contempt with 20-something years sober of my own religion, still hidden, buried, protecting itself. Who cares to admit complete defeat? In step one, it talks about that in the 12, which right here I'm doing it. But it was necessary to get free. So it's God who's giving it to me over and over and over again. And when I got to fear, our book says we outgrow fear, but I had all these fears. My whole life was driven by fear. Anything that goes on now is driven by fear. My book says we're going to outgrow fear, but not because I'm a nice guy. It has to do with God's power. Here's one of the evil and corroding threads for me and many others I've encountered. Self-confidence. It prolongs the illusion of self-reliance. That's all it does. I have some money. I'm good. I got good money. I got coin, as we used to say, right? I got a nice car. I got a really good job. You know, I got things. Look at me. I'm respected in AA. Things are going good. It just makes me think I'm in charge again, and I just push God out. God's on the outer fringes once again. Inventory slams that all closed because what I'm doing is taking a look at me. Here's the other thing I found. When I get to the third column, I can see my attachments and my need for approval from other people, especially with security, my emotional security, what I need to be okay. I share inventory with Mick every Wednesday, and we'll do inventory, and sometimes he rewrites the third column for me. Because the ego still don't want me to see everything. But when it's made clear, I can see my attachments to approval, my attachments a need to be right, etc. These are the little things, because the illness gets sharp, and it'll come in through the back door. It's not going to come right at me. It'll come in with little things. And as I was told, we'll die from 1,000 cuts. Just bleed out, little by slowly. Little by slowly. And then when we wake up, it's like there's nothing left anymore. The only thing should be nothing left of at the end of the inventory is me, the self. It should be smashed. Sex inventory, my ideas of how a man should be, how a woman should be. You know, how deluded. I sometimes I'm embarrassed to say this. I grew up, you know, with old belief systems, like Neanderthal belief systems. So much so I remember my first love. She was brilliant. She went off to New York University, graduated like valedictorian, made a kajillion dollars on Wall Street, and she was a career woman. And I'm dating her. We're like puppy love. And she says, I'm going to go to college. And I said, college? What's wrong with you? You're a woman. You don't go to college. You marry me, stay home, have babies, clean my house. And I swear, I thought that was like, okay, I'm being a man, because that's what I was brought up with. That's why she doesn't date me anymore. Right? But you can see the collision I was having in just dating as a young guy, because that's how I thought relationships look. I had to take a look at that. With sex itself, I found it's control, it's positive, it's affirmation, instant gratification. Unless I'm in love with someone, then it's an act of love. But any other time, it's I need to feel good. I need to control. I need what I got to get what I want right now, with little or no care for the other person involved. Well, what an order. I can't go through it. I had to take a look at that. And then I did principles and institutions, and I saw how incredibly angry I was with the medical community because they didn't save my mom. This is the first time through the work. How furious I was with the religious community because my mom was a church member and she committed suicide. They failed. He failed. I was incredibly angry for years with insurance companies for their shenanigans and my hate towards politicians and police department, because they almost beat my dad to death one time. So I'm 28. I'm writing another inventory a few years later. I'm writing another inventory. And those things kept popping up. Police, insurance, medical, religious. Police, insurance, medical, religious. There's a problem with me. Do I want to get free of it? We love our drama. We love our story. We love our stuff. Ask me how I'm doing. 3 hours later, you didn't even leave. You know, I still got you. Well, let me tell you about me. I wear this stuff. As one woman calls it, it's my currency. It's how I operate with all my wounds. Was I willing to let go of that? Well, at some point when it got painful enough, I wrote inventory. I was certainly willing to let go of it. God kept giving it to me as this is a big block for you, you know. Worshipping of other things. I completed my first 4-step. And I've been doing them ever since. I remember I was living in Bay Ridge, Brooklyn. I had nothing. And this, I had a bookshelf that I made into a desk. And I lived on, I think it was the 4th floor in Bay Ridge, and if I looked out the window, I can see a little piece of the Verrazano Bridge, the little lights on the top. And I remember writing, and I had this little lamp, and I'm writing my inventory, I'm following direction, I'm praying and writing and praying and writing and praying and writing. I look out the Verrazano Bridge once in a while, and I know you guys identify with this. There was a sacredness to it. As the stuff is popping up in column 4, and I'm looking at me, there was still some sort of safety in that. That I was actually doing this. In discipline, there's freedom. In doing, we succeed. And when our book talks about as we reveal ourselves to God, he discloses himself to us, something along the lines of, that's exactly what's going on. I was being fed. And I got the work done, and I went to sit with my sponsor, and we'll talk about step 5. But it had to be cleaned out. I think it was Chuck Chamberlain would say, uncover, discover, and discard. Get rid of, out. I can't work on this stuff on my own power. I don't have the power to work on my defects. I can't work on my defects. I can't work on me. I destroy me, and I hurt people along the way on my own power. God's power, everything changes. How are we able to do the things we do in recovery doesn't make sense. The spiritual life makes no sense. Uncommon sense becomes common sense. Everything I used to be, I'm not. That doesn't mean I'm cured of that. It's, you know, hanging out outside. How can we get them today? When we get placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected, that doesn't happen because I go to AA means the result of chopping wood and carrying wood and the pruning of the tree where I get to that place. All orchestrated by God. You know what? The path is in front of us to walk. We just got to clean it up a bit through removal. God's laid out the path. Am I going to answer him? Am I going to listen to him? Am I going to trust him? Am I going to follow him? Because the path is laid out. Whether I'm a carpenter or a CEO, the path is glorious. That's what I found out. I don't have a lot of money. I mean, I'm not some rich guy living in South Florida. I'm, you know, chopping wood and carrying water. My life has never been as good. I mean, I have things in my life now that... And it's all because of I get out of the way. I have a sponsor who cares. You know, God gives me a relationship with someone who cares. And I work for people who care. I don't know. I does it make sense to me? There's still a little piece of me that thinks somebody's going to say, hey, wake up. Move over because he's in the hallway with me or she's in the hallway with me. And there's still another piece of me, and I talk to Mick a lot about this, still a piece of me that doesn't feel deserving of even sitting giving you a workshop. You know, when they call me, hey, you want to speak at a conference, I want to say, you got the right number? There's a lot of people out there. I don't know. God just keeps calling me. And so I get to share some of this. So thank you.
Thanks, Peter. I looked at the fourth step, and I looked at the inventory, and I thought, this is not a sufficient inventory. This was in my brilliance. Coming into Alcoholics Anonymous. This is not thorough. Resentments, fear, and sex, that's it? I mean, what about, I don't know what else I thought was supposed to happen in here. But once again, there was only one program offered to me, and it was the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And in this book, it says to do this three-part inventory. And I did the three-part inventory, and my life has changed so much that the person I told you about yesterday doesn't exist anymore. I guess with real diligent work, I could bring him back. But I don't know. I don't think God would allow that. So this program works. And I do want to share that when I started this, I told you I was black and white. So they said, there's a God. Now you're going to go write an inventory after I took the third step with somebody else on my knees, holding hands uncomfortably. And so I took my piece of paper and my notebook. I set it on the table. I put the pencil next to it. I folded my arms and I said, all right. And I heard this thing next to my ear. And it sounded like somebody slapped two two-by-fours together. And I picked up my pencil, and I wrote something that I did when I was 4 years old on that piece of paper. And I couldn't believe it. I didn't remember that in the sense that, you know, I can tell you about something in high school. It was given to me out of the recesses of my life. Okay? And I went and told everybody about it in the meetings. I couldn't believe, like, God acted. And I'm sharing in the meeting, and that's when this man pulled me aside. And he said, Mickey, what's happening in that inventory is for you. You don't talk to anybody about it right now. I mean, I could talk to my sponsor if I had questions or whatever, but you don't bleed off the power of what's being given to you. So I didn't talk about it. And God guided me through that inventory. There are no punishing steps in Alcoholics Anonymous. No punishing steps. There's no gotcha. It's not like we get up to 9 and we gotcha. Or we got in inventory and we gotcha. This is all healing. This is all healing. Given out of kindness and power. And how in the world shy of God dispensing this to Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob. How in the world did they ever come up with a spiritual connection to us being the town drunks? Well, all you need is this. What do you think Christopher Reeves would have given after his terrible horse riding injury? What would he have given for a book that will tell him, if you read this book and do what it says in it, you'll be able to get out of that chair? So we feel put upon. God, I've got this massive inventory, blah, blah, blah. We get to. I know we're moving along at a rapid clip. It's now just about, did you have something else you wanted to say?
Real quick, we have promises and warnings throughout the book, and in end of the fourth step, some promises. It says, we have listed and analyzed our resentments. We have begun to comprehend their futility and fatality. We commence to see their terrible destructiveness. I'm giving new eyes here. We have begun to learn tolerance, patience, and goodwill to all men, even our enemies, for we look upon them as sick people. We have listed the people we have hurt by our conduct and are willing to straighten out the past if we can. That's step four. I didn't even get to discussing this. This is what they're promising me is going to happen. It's already had a shift. My eyes have been opened by this power. Incredible stuff going on already. The roots are grasping new soil. I knew someone, I watched it unfold, and I says, what an AA story. These bonsai trees, these little Japanese trees, and she had one that was dying in front of us and didn't know what to do with it, so we took it to the guy who deals with it, the tree guy, I call him, and he gave us instructions, and we followed the instructions specifically as he told us. And so what it required was taking the tree out, root and branch, the whole thing, cleaning the roots, stripping them down pretty much, and putting them in this new soil and letting them sit and feeding it with just a small amount of this medicine. And this tree goes into shock. It freezes. And you keep nurturing it, and little by slow, those roots take grasp in new soil, and then you see the color come back on in the tree, and the leaves start to come out, and it looks like it's on steroids after a couple of months. It came back to life, which is exactly what happens to us. We get ripped out. We land in here. We got the deer in the headlights look. What is going on? I can't believe this stuff is coming to me. Why am I doing this? And we land in the world of the spirit, and we're alive again. And quite frankly, many of us are something to behold. And I don't mean that in a pretentious way. We are, because we were dying, and now we get to live. You know? I remember Mick had told me a long time ago this famous line from a movie, I see dead people, and we come into AA, and we see people dying in front of us. I see dead people. And the information's right here. And I'm going to embarrass somebody, but there's a young fella here who came to this place where I worked. I don't know why God's given me this. And I watched this young fella deteriorate in front of me. But he was given a mustard seed of willingness to get well. And anyway, he's here this weekend, and it could have been different. We could have been hearing about him or read about him and you know, throwing flowers on his grave. But sometimes when you do this and you see those little stories, you kind of get on a plane and go home and say, maybe I'm doing something right. So that's all I got. Thanks.
Come back and be with us at 3 o'clock if we can make it sharp. Welcome back. We are now going to discuss 5, 6, and 7. All right. On page 72 in the book, it says, into action. Having made our personal inventory, what shall we do about it? We've been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator, and to discover the obstacles in our path. We have admitted certain defects. We have ascertained in a rough way what the trouble is. We put our finger on the weak items in our personal inventory. Now these are about to be cast out. Can you imagine? This requires action on our part, which when completed will mean that we have admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our defects. This brings us to the fifth step in the program of recovery mentioned in the preceding chapter. Skipping down, it says, you know, this is perhaps difficult. We will be more reconciled to discussing ourselves with another person when we see good reasons why we should do so. The best reason first. If we skip this vital step, we may not overcome drinking. There's a good reason, right? Time after time, newcomers have tried to keep to themselves certain facts about their lives. Trying to avoid this humbling experience, they've turned to easier methods. Almost invariably, they got drunk. Having persevered with the rest of the program, they wondered why they fell. We think the reason is that they never completed their house cleaning. They took inventory, all right, but hung on to some of the worst items in stock. They only thought that they had lost their egoism and fear. They only thought that they had humbled themselves. But they had not learned enough of humility, fearlessness, and honesty in the sense we find it necessary until they told someone else all their life story. I come from a religion that includes confession. And so I know the value of confessing my faults, my sins. But doing a fifth step in Alcoholics Anonymous was a new breed of cat. Now I'm not going to be talking to a priest with a screen and doing all of that. I'm going to be face to face with somebody and I'm going to spill the beans. I'm going to tell them. And I was so ashamed. I was so ashamed of the way I'd been living, so ashamed of the things that I had done. So I went and sat down, and I sat down with my sponsor at the time to do my fifth step. And he was a defrocked Catholic priest. And he had these two blue eyes that could look right through a steel door. He really intimidated me. And he had those eyebrows. You know those guys? Sometimes they can really whoop up those eyebrows. He had those eyebrows, right? And I'm going in there, holy moly. I was shaking like a leaf on a fuzzy tree going into that fifth step. It's my first one. And so I started telling him all about it, because they told me, you got to dump the whole load, son. You got to go in there and you got to tell the truth. And so I went in and I told the truth. And there were times in there, man, I mean, I can't feel my legs. I can't feel my lips. I am just like disassociating as I'm sitting there doing this fifth step at times. And what happened was, I got to rejoin the family of men. I had been so isolated and feeding on myself. And to tell somebody what I had done, what had gone on, who I hated, and then taking responsibility for all this. So my analysis that this inventory was insufficient to get at where it hurts was totally wrong. It got to where it hurt, all right, and I couldn't believe it. This guy stayed in the same room with me. Now, I have to tell you, this particular priest, ex-priest, had killed two people, vehicular homicide, drunk, out on the road, out of his mind. So it's not like this guy was, you know, Mother Teresa or anybody. But he also didn't run out of that room. And I was afraid he was going to. Not that I'm the worst person that ever lived, but I was carrying this stuff. It turns out I am a very drug sensitive person. I hear people talking about taking all these heavy drugs and stuff. I can't take one antihistamine pill. I'm in bed 8 hours. I feel so sick. I can't even tell you. Right? So I'm not Mr. Drug Addict, okay? I was doing immoral acts, insanity, that were the equivalent of me doing all the acid, all the heroin, everything. And I was trying to roll down the road carrying this load in my soul. I couldn't breathe. I could hardly function. I was out of my mind. So what happened? I truly got the sense that I was coming home, that I got to come home. I got to come back to life. I couldn't believe it. There were things, my life got so cramped. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, and you guys talked about this stuff like, oh, yeah, I did blah, blah, blah. And I was like semi-horrified. But I also felt consoled because I wasn't alone. I was telling somebody yesterday, when I got sober, we used to have sex meetings, discussion meetings. Male and female. Sex meetings in Alcoholics Anonymous. It is a topic in the big book. Now we're going to have a meeting about sex. Man, I'm in there and I'm feeling like a complete twitch. And people are talking in generous and general enough terms that we can sit in the room together. Nobody's preying on anybody. We're not doing this trick. Because I'm in there, I'm dying behind this. And again, I'm sorry, but I got a loaded gun at home. I'm not kidding you. I'm dying behind this stuff that I'm carrying. So what would happen is afterwards, after the meeting, people would come up to me, and then they would share very specifically about how they were being eaten alive by the sexual activity and fantasy in their lives. And since then, I've been in this rodeo for 40 years. I can't tell you how many people, male and female, who are carrying that weight in their lives, and there's no freedom in it. It's like having a shadow self. Do you understand what I'm saying? They got this secret. We got this secret, and we have no freedom. So it's to be able to talk about these things and to unload this. So I came out of that fifth step, and I sat out in my car, and I couldn't remember how to operate it. I was just like, God, it was like the elephant was lifted off my chest. I got a chance to breathe, and I thought, oh, man. And I had read this article in National Geographic magazine, and it was about this guy who decided to sail across the Arctic Ocean solo on a sailing ship. He had a bubble on the deck, and he had rods and pulleys so he could operate the sails and everything. And he got into what they call the Screaming 60s. And I don't know if the latitudes, what lines or longitudes, I can't remember. But he got into some longitudes or latitudes called the Screaming 60s. That means that there were 60-foot swells. 60-foot seas means a six-story building. And they picked up, and I remember his little craft was called the Ice Bird. And they picked it up, turned it over, and plunged it into the Arctic Ocean, mast first, broke his mast, killed his radio, soaked everything inside. And this guy's becalmed in the Arctic Ocean. No way to get out of the deal, and he's bailing. And here was his mantra. I must earn my place in the family of man every day. As he would bail out, not knowing if he was going to die or not. I read that article and I thought, my God, I get a chance to earn my place in the family of man again, to hold my head up, not instant, not overnight. And the book says we don't get sick overnight and we're not going to get well overnight. But little by little, I got this opportunity because of you, because of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, to unload that elephant before it killed me. So the fifth step, I'm in there with an ex-priest, but a non-priest, not in a religious ceremony, and I'm telling another human being, brother, here's where it hurts. That's what I got.
After I complete the fifth step, on page 75, it says, once having taken the step withholding nothing, we're delighted from some fifth step promises. It says we can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. Our book also tells us we outgrow fear. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator, starting to experience oneness with God, which is what Mickey just explained pretty much. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience, the infancy of one perhaps, but it's happening. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. We feel that we're on the broad highway walking hand in hand. There's oneness, no separation with the spirit of the universe. And it gives me instructions what to do when I go home. Going into the fifth step, it sets me up as to what I'm looking at, what I'm supposed to do, what this person listening is supposed to do. And nowadays, we pretty much know we have a sponsor. And I sit with folks and I read some things to them out of this book before we get going. And I get prepared because God's about to use me because it tells me I'm on a life and death errand. It says when we decide to hear our story, we waste no time. I have a written inventory and prepared for a long talk. We explain to our partner or our sponsor what we're about to do and why we have to do it, and they pretty much know why we're there. It says the sponsor, he should or she should realize we're engaged upon a life and death errand. So God is giving the sponsor that kind of responsibility on a life and death errand. Now that makes absolutely no sense in the light of the way we lived. We're alcoholic, we're drunks, we get sober, and God says, I'm going to entrust you with one of my children to bring him from point A to point B. What a responsibility. It's being an agent for God, isn't it? But I can't transmit something I haven't got, and I will what I do, and that can be untreated alcoholism. So I better be spiritually fit. I better have some spiritual muscles here going in, and the total reliance upon God. So when I know I'm going to hear a fifth step, I go into a prayer and I go into meditation. Father, just show me what to hear. Let me listen to what they're not telling me. And I always like to watch body language just the way I just do it. When we get to sex inventory and they're squirming and crawling around, I know there's more. Who wants to talk about sex inventory? A man to a man talking about those compromising things. And you watch, you know, they start to mumble. I remember when I wrote sex inventory the first time, it was little squibbly, tiny writing. And I was going, and Hopi said, don't worry about it. We don't need to do this part. And I remember my sponsor says, how much shame are you feeling? I says to him, it's uncomfortable. He says, go home and write inventory about that. And I got it out, and there's a name for it. It's already been done. And so they sit with me. And when we're done with the fifth step, we come out and we talk about this. Those fifth step promises don't necessarily materialize as soon as I'm done with the fifth step. They may materialize in six and seven. It did for me the first time out. But I what I do is when I'm hearing a fifth step, I have a notepad and pen in front of me along with a big book. And as they're talking, I'm an instrument here, and I'm going to be inspired to write some things as they're sharing with me. And I'll just write some notes, maybe some defects that I hear. And here we are on page 25, we'll say. And I got writing some things on. I'll stop and say, hey, you were talking about this when you were 10, and you're 40. It's the same thing showing up. The players have changed. The states have changed, perhaps. The behavior is the same. And how could I be present if I'm still driven by the past? So that helps them with six and seven. And so I listen and I take notes. The other thing and this is what I do, and I set up a rule, but it gets bent, is what I like to do is when I'm sharing inventory with you, it's easy for me to say, well, let me explain this inventory to you, which means I'm going to make me right and you wrong. Resentment, Joe, he did this. Let me explain really what happened here. And so let me off the hook. So what I do is I'm assuming that God wrote the inventory for you, And so I don't need your ego now to interrupt that and get in the way and start explaining the whole thing away. So I tell these men, I don't want you to talk about anything other than what's on paper. I'll stop you, I'll ask questions, and we might sit on inventory for a while. And once we kind of set that up, and then God will determine how the rest of it flows. And I just have to share a quick story. It's my favorite. There was a guy, I was living in Staten Island, and I'll change his name, but I just to call him, we'll call him Joey Loopholes, because
nice.
He was related to Joey Bag of Donuts, but that's a whole other thing. But this guy, Loopholes, because he was looking for a loophole. He was, no matter what you threw at him, he would listen and find a loop, just look for something to prove me in the book wrong. And so he's at my house. I'm living in Staten Island, and I'm hearing his inventory, and oh, my Lord, have mercy. It was, well, yeah, but let me explain. Yeah, but how come this? And yeah, but if they didn't do it, it was just going on and on. I said, let's take a break. I got sweat pouring off of me. My blood pressure's through the roof. And I went into my bathroom. I throw cold water on my face, and I get on my knees, and I go, God, I don't know what to do with this guy. He's going to make me drink by the time we're done. So he said, Father, please, I'm trying to help. I don't know what to do with this guy. I've hit a wall. I get up off my knees. I go to the living room. I sit down at the table. I don't know. Nothing's coming. He's not parting the seas for me until I look at him, and what comes out of my mouth is this. Well, again, I'll call him Joe. He says, Joe, all I want you to do moving forward is just read your fourth column. I couldn't believe I said that. I even know why I said it. But that's what I was inspired to say. And he says, yeah, but I can't. I says, no, just your fourth. I don't hear anything else. Just keep going. Fourth column, turn the page. Fourth column, turn the page. And that's what we did. And I have to say that was inspired by God, because somewhere in that, he just kept reading fourth column. I didn't say anything. Flip the page. Flip the page. This guy, if you will, split open in front of me. Everything changed. I didn't get one rebuttal. His whole spirit calmed. His whole being calmed. I saw his eyes for the first time. You know that light when it goes on, you suddenly, oh, there you are, you're here. The body's been here for the longest time. This guy was running around Staten Island with Big Book under his arm, sponsoring guys. His talk, when he would give a talk to me, he was a completely different guy. And his relationship, which was in shambles, changed. The guy had a terrible hygiene problem. That disappeared. And he showed up for work, grateful to have a job. Everything changed about this guy, but it happened right at my dining room table when this guy pretty much split wide open, and I was given instructions like that, and I didn't know it. There wasn't an immediate response until I sat down, and you know when words come out and you go, wow, that was pretty good. I didn't even know that. I can't believe I'm saying this, but I realized where it came from. God had to make me open enough to hear that and to trust that. Get home, and I'm quiet for an hour, and I really honor this. I don't play with this. I don't go do things, and I'll catch up to the hour later, and I'm given some instructions what to do. It's a prayer that I thank God from the bottom of my heart that I know him better, and I say that prayer even if I may not be feeling it at the time, and they give, Bill writes the same thing over and over again. He's coming in from different angles, so I can hear at least one thing, and he's pretty much asking me, did you leave anything out? Did you skip over something? As I try to sneak something through the archway that maybe God won't know about. And so that's one of the questions I always ask. Have you left anything out? Anything you want to tell me? And sometimes I'll get home and say, oh, you know what? I got something. Or they'll remember something. And one other thing, it's not in the book, but I just learned this. It's really, I got this from a therapist, and it seems to work because it's very common with us. I unload everything to you in my fifth step, everything. And you're embracing me and say, good job, and I'm ready to go home for the hour, and I get my car as I'm driving away. I'm going, oh, my God, he knows it. Why'd I do that for? This guy knows about those things. Oh, my God, he's going to tell everyone. I call it the boomerang. You throw it out and it comes right back and cuts you to ribbons. And I let them be aware that this might happen. And all it is you get now to see your illness in neon lights, how it wants to cut you up. Pay no attention to it. Discount everything the mind tells you. Just go home, be quiet. And when I'm done with those questions, we look at step 6, considerations. which really turns out to be my first step for life here, because these are the things that are left over. A lot of stuff has fell through the screen. Like when you're kind of sifting through and things are falling through, and there's a couple little nuggets that won't fit through the screen. Those defects that beget other defects. It says, if I can answer to my satisfaction, the question's on page 75. It doesn't say the sponsor or the home group, to my satisfaction. This, after that hour, it's between me and my God, where I've had a little shift, a little awakening, and maybe a dose of honesty that, yeah, okay, I've been thorough. It asked me, am I ready to let God remove all the things which I consider objectionable, all the things that are no good for me? I'm willing to cut those loose. I don't know where I'm going. I don't know what's going to be made of me. But they got to go. It says, can he now take them all, every one? If I still cling to something, I won't let go. I go back to God to have them let go. It says, it uses the word indispensable, which is mean absolutely required. Willingness is absolutely required here. I'm at another crossroads. And so if I'm clear on everything, that I've been thorough, I haven't left anything out that I'm consciously aware of, I'm ready to move forward. I don't know what God's going to do with me, but I'm moving. I'm chopping wood and carrying water. I was given an assignment many times that I list defects that were discussed in my inventory. And it doesn't mean it's right on point, but selfishness, dishonesty, greed, the seven deadly sins, whatever it might be, I list them. And just so I can see, I list the opposite of a defect, just so I get an idea of what I've been doing and perhaps how God really made me. Love, hate love, dishonesty, honesty, things like that. When I'm in a place of be willing to be made new again, my seven-step prayer really becomes an extension of my third-step prayer. It's pretty much doing the same thing again. Again, I'm turning everything back to God. I get to see how many defects were fueled by fear, all of them. How much of me was fueled by fear, all of me. How much self-reliance was involved in my life, all of it. Which leads me to do things and say things that contradicts what he has for me. This thing called free will. Who gave it to me? Me? He did. What a gift. Go live your life. And I blow that up. Asset taken to the extreme. So I need to be right-sized again. And the seven-step prayer, I offer things to God, these defects, but knowing what I think is good for me might be bad and vice versa. Some of those things he needs to tweak. Some of those things need to be thrown out. But I can't work on them. All I can do is surrender. And it's up to, with the touch of the master's hand, to do what he's going to do and make me in his likeness. Because we got work to do. We got to go to work every day. And the primary purpose, I'm a director. I got a nice fancy job at my treatment center. But I work for him first. Primary purpose, at work, my play, whatever I'm doing. In fact, when I'm working or playing, you shouldn't be able to tell the difference. It should all look the same. One movement. I just wear different hats throughout the day. So he needs to tweak me into his liking, into his image, if you will, so I go out and carry the message and not apologize for his name anymore, even if it's not popular. Not apologize for my big book, even if it's not popular. But shout from the rooftops about this power called God and this book. I'm not that sharp. I can't spot this room and say, oh, they need it, and they need it, and they need it. I don't know who. It could be the person right in front of me with 30 years sober. So I just need to speak truth. And in order to do that, the false must die, which he's about to do for me. So it's a surrender. And it says, my creator, I'm now willing. Right now, you should have all of me, good and bad. Not for me to determine what's good and bad. I pray. That's a surrender. I'm praying to you to do this for me. That you remove from me every single defective character, which stands in the way of what? My usefulness to you and other people. Not to make me a circuit speaker, or to be a big shot at work, or to be popular. It's to do God's work. Period, end of story. And what do? I go out and do his bidding. 8 and 9. Grow with him in 10 and 11. And go bring this message to others and take this into all my affairs. Now I'm an agent for God. And nothing less than that great fact. So it's more pruning that goes on. Each time through the work, there's more work to be done. I remember I was going through the work, it was maybe the fifth time or whatever it was, and I said to my sponsor, Time, I says, Mark, I don't think I have a lot of names. Things are pretty good. He said, let's see what God has. 75 names showed up. A little force feeding of humility. Where did that come from? Right? All the stuff under the surface. One of the most dangerous things I found is when we become very matter-of-fact about tragedy. Very matter-of-fact. We get used to defects. Turn on the news, CNN, we're blowing each other up. It looks like the final days are coming any minute, the way, right? But what do? You go to Fox News, and then the same thing. You go to another killing. You know what? Let's watch Seinfeld. If anyone landed at another planet and they turn on the news and they said, I'm blowing you up and you're blowing me up, they go, hold it, time out. What's going on here? What do you mean somebody was murdered? What do you mean a school got blown? Well, stop, hold it. They would be mortified. What do? We just keep rolling. Same thing with my defects. I am selfish, I'm self-centered, I'm acting out sexually, I don't pray, I got drunk again. That's my story. Let's see what else is going on. Very dangerous. Very dangerous. This is the first time, really, where we put the brakes on. This has to change. And it comes through a surrender. So that's all I got. Thanks.
Thank you, Peter. So imagine now if we've done all this talking, considering, praying, decision-making, then we've taken out the pad and pencil and we've listed all this work. We've got reams of inventory written. We've fifth-stepped with somebody. We've admitted all this to ourselves, to our God, and to another human being. For real, it's out there. It's out there. We've done it. And as solitary self-appraisal it talks about earlier, we could just go write this out. But boy, I'll tell you what, if you noticed, right, and I know you have, the difference between writing it out solo by yourself and then going and telling somebody else, all of a sudden I'm hearing stuff that I never heard before. It's coming home. Imagine we do all that and there's no sixth and seventh step. Let's just take six and for a moment. Let's just take six and seven out of the program. Let's just pull them out. Right? Now I got all this stuff, I got a file drawer full of stuff about Mickey. I got all this written out. What am I to do with it? What do I do with it? Well, Mickey, stop it. Really? That's it? Stop it? I'm the one who created it. How am I going to stop it? Six and seven don't have much written about them in the big book. So what we do, and I've seen this happen time again, we go over, let's read the 12 steps and 12 traditions. We're looking for tonnage. We're looking for, I need more words. Right? Because there's got to be some mojo going on here. Right? There's no mojo. I can't do anything with this. I'm stuck. I got it. It's all over me. And I cannot do anything about it. In all cases, the first step applies. I'm powerless. I can't move this. So we became entirely ready to have God remove these defects of character. Now we're going to put step six back. So if a child then, if you've been around children and they've broken a toy and they're coming across the room and they're screaming and crying and they've got the broken toy in their hand, and they're coming to you because they've got this thing that's broken that's important to them, right? And they stand in front of you and they will not let go of the toy. And you're saying, that's okay, honey, just let go of the toy. I'll fix it. And they're holding on to that sucker. Now we throw step six out again. Because what I've done is so horrible that I cannot be forgiven, and I will not forgive myself. I can only throw myself on the mercy of the court of heaven. You understand? It's all I can do. I can't fix it. So I'm going to open my hand and I'm going to let it go, Father. Right? Step six. We're entirely ready. But let's, before we let go of it, let's think about it for a second now. Step six, we're entirely ready to have God remove these defects of character. Now, what defects of character? The ones that I have conjured up in my life to do business with, to do business from. It is the platform upon which I have stood. This is the way I've manipulated my way through life. This is what has occurred to me as a safe way of getting through. And now it's not like, oh, really? I'm just going to go let go of it? I don't think so. Because if I let go of that, I got nothing. Do you see what I'm saying? I got nothing. I got no way to do business. So it's a more serious consideration than, yes, I admit it's objectionable, and let's just move on. If I let go of this, how am I going to live? How am I going to get through a day? If I don't let go of it, I'm not going to have a day. So it's this and that. It's always this and that. Okay, so I'm entirely ready to have God remove these defects of character. Then I do this, the next serious thing. I'm going to go into the face of God and I'm going to say, will you please take them away? Will you please take them away? So every time I come to step seven, I'm thinking about this movie, Joe and the Volcano. It's an older movie with Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan. And at one point, Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan are like shipwrecked out on the South Pacific Ocean on these huge steamer trunks that this guy bought. She's passed out, maybe dying, we don't know. And Tom Hanks is there at moonrise in the Pacific. And he's on his knees and the moon begins to come up. And the camera pulls back. Now, Tom Hanks, because he sees this moon, he's awe-stricken with this moon. And so the moon comes up and it's enormous. The camera's back over here. Tom Hanks is now this big. And then the camera comes up close to his face and he looks at the moon and he said, I forgot how big you are. You see what I'm saying? I forgot how big you are. I'm coming and standing in your face and I'm saying, boss, please take this off of me. Right? And then I got to tell you something that's got some bad language in it because I really want you to hear this. They have a line in the seven-step prayer that says, I'm ready that you should have all of me, the good and the bad. I read that line. And I thought, wow. This is the only seven-step prayer I could come up with at the time. And again, please forgive me. This was my seven-step prayer. God, I know I'm an asshole. If you got any jobs for an asshole, give them to me. That was it. Some seven-step prayer, huh? I don't mean to offend anyone. I'm just telling you. I'm in my office. I'm standing out, looking out the window, and I just felt crushed. And I was like, they said I could go to you, the good and the bad. I don't have to clean Mickey up to be in your face, to be in your presence. So if you got jobs for somebody who's really broken, please give them to me. I'll go to work for you. But I can't clean my act up. I can't come up with it. You know, this is an amazing weekend. Would you agree? It's a time where we can sit and talk to each other and be in dialogue with each other and say, listen, this is the way it really is. This is the way I hurt. This is the way I feel victory. These are the obstacles that I encounter. And this is what I had a chance to do with them. And I get to be in this room with these really